Welcome to the all-new VM Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing and 3D printing technologies with the people that invent, develop, use, and market them. Join us on this journey as we take you from voxels to matter through the most advanced applications across aerospace, automotive, healthcare, consumer products, and the most advanced areas of digital production. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of Voxel Matters, the most trusted media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-growing world of additive manufacturing. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the VM Podcast. Mass production is the El Dorado of additive manufacturing. It is not easy to achieve, and very few companies have been able to cost-effectively produce thousands and even millions of parts using AM technology. One of these companies is Oechsler, a major manufacturer of polymer parts for various key industries, including automotive and sportswear. The German company achieved several world firsts in terms of serial production after building multiple additive production facilities. Now, under the leadership of Andreas Knöckel, Head of Program Management Additive Manufacturing, the company is going to the next level, targeting lot size one and highly customized products. These include Insolo, a 3D printed insole for the orthopedic market and beyond, as well as multiple bike saddles. In addition, Oechsler recently launched an advanced online ordering platform, which empowers clients to place orders for 3D printed parts quickly, and redefines the landscape of additive manufacturing by combining technology and convenience. We're going to discuss these latest developments with Andreas Knöckel. Hi, Andreas, and welcome to a new episode of the VM Podcast.
Hello, everyone.
Great. So, Andreas, or Andy, if I can call you Andy, can you start by telling us a little bit about the recent history of Oechsler and the biggest achievements in terms of AM production?
Yes, so indeed, our Oechsler core competence is not 3D printing. Yeah? We are coming out of injection molding and assembly of high complex automotive or health parts. In 2016, we decided with one of our biggest partners slash customers, which is Adidas, to go for 3D printing in a scaled version. That's when we ramped up the 4D production. It started, our journey started then, go live in 2017, where we really ramped up German plus Asian production for a printer fleet. We had 185 printers running midsoles only. And yeah, that went on for a while. The project lead was within my team. The technical team was during that time process engineering and development. And following that journey, we as Oechsler decided in 2020, okay, looks like we are doing pretty well. Yeah, because the numbers, I think they have been also within the biggest in additive manufacturing. We produced, I would say, in average around 1 million pairs per year.
Wow.
We decided, okay, why not leveraging all of what we did in technology, in part development, in production and post-process for other products. That's when we decided we will go in a much wider field, not only shoe components, not only sporting goods. When we ramped up in 2019, the idea of own product possibilities and launched all of those in 2020, meaning generating different types of products. We had a huge focus on lattice components. Yeah, because that's one of the expertise our engineering does have. And we went really for different markets from sporting to orthotic, automotive. And that's where we are right now, still running a huge fleet, different types of technologies and serving all those products. And meanwhile, we are adding also more and more non-lattice parts, so very technical components, not just prototyping, really having visual or parts you can see, for example, in the car automotive interior as A-class surface components.
And the Adidas project was definitely one of the biggest stories of 3D printing ever. And now, as you said, you ramped up production and are targeting batch size one, right? So more like customization and many different small lots. Is that the direction you will be going? And how are you structured to support this kind of production?
Yes, indeed. That's now a parallel path which we did open. The reason was pretty simple. At the beginning, we only focused on how can you produce a lot of parts out of 3D printing, which usually it's not known for. So we managed everything around material supply, pre and post the print, but also the full post process that you can manage thousands of parts going through that, meaning our equipment is quite different from what you would see somewhere else. Yeah, so it's not the classic 3D post process machines. And we decided, okay, we reached the level where we produce scaled volumes at a very good quality. Can't we use all our know-how and technology to produce or smaller batches at the same level of quality and throughput in regards to speed? And that's when we decide, okay, yes, we do, but we don't go directly in the route of prototyping only. We still want to stay in the product area and going for lot size one, which means similar products, but really customized. Yes, it was quite a struggle. On the one hand, everyone knows us only for big numbers. Now we change a little. And for sure, from the organization, you cannot route lot size one products through, yeah, let's say, the full production environment like usual, yeah, handing over, going through every single project step by step. At the end, we gathered a team around lot size one projects, meaning much more lean. They also are able to cover much more process steps within the regular process chain. It's not that such a project goes immediately only through business development, project lead, production, quality, logistics. So it's only two functions where such a project goes through. So at the end, from incoming data to a shipment, it's much less hands on the parts. It's therefore faster. And for sure, as I mentioned, it's lot size one. Every part is different.
Yeah.
Less mistakes can be done and are done, because at the end, whoever orders it, if you, for example, order a pair of insoles, you must get yours and not mine. So all this is avoided by having a much more lean structure for those projects.
I see. And in fact, that's what I was going to ask you, because from you in the past, we've covered some really fascinating projects around automotive. We've, of course, the Adidas, and we know you work on many different applications. But one of the more interesting ones that emerged recently is the Insolo project, specifically for insoles. And what I wanted to understand from you is, how was that project developed and how exactly are you able to deliver high in this kind of product line?
Yes. So we, as I mentioned, we put a lot of experience in lattice products. And during the past, when we thought about insoles, especially orthotic ones, where you need a geometry change for every customer or patient, we had the ability to produce, to run through a lot of insoles, but we do not have the expertise what must be inside an insole that it really fits to the patient's needs, because it's special. If it's not a sporting goods, it's really an orthotic device. And this combined with a lattice, which changes for every single piece, even left to, we looked for a partner, and maybe it was also some luck that we partnered up with Insolo. And right now together, we have the solution that Insolo is also specialized in lattice, but especially in customization of lattice. Meaning, if we now get a model of a scan or a ready insole model, we partner up with Insolo, lattice is put in, pretty straightforward and simple, and then production and caring about the customer is then running via Oechsler, meaning they could also get directly the parts from us. At the end of the day, we provide together Oechsler and Insolo. It's not like a co-branding, it's just two companies who do fit together. We are providing a full set of solutions to get at the end of the day from a regular orthotic scan or a shape to the final insole, and all steps in between are covered.
I know you've had experience in this with the Adidas project, but a lot of times one of the biggest challenges is to make these, you can make these products customized, but how do you do that cost effectively? So what is it that enables you to provide these kinds of services in a cost-effective way?
I think there are two major facts right now. The first one is that for the customized projects, or even projects which are on a smaller side of the lot size, we do leverage from all the serial production we are running in parallel. Meaning, if, for example, let's just take as our liquid production, which is based on the carbon fleet as an example, we are producing so many parts on those printers that we order material in bulk. In bulk means huge, huge containers, sure. 1,000 liter containers. If now a customer comes and wants whatever, 10 pairs of insoles, for sure we do not order material only for the 10 pairs. Meaning we have on premise in warehouse the 1,000 liter containers, and small scale customers directly can leverage out of bulk costs, for example, from material, from shipment and so on. So that's one topic. And the second one, which sometimes makes the project time until something goes to the market a little longer, I would say. But even if everything is customized, we are looking into what is not customized. Yes, there are different sizes. Customer needs different shapes of the footbed. But at the end, shoe sizes are still the same. Yeah, so it's 38, 38 and a half, 40 and so on and so on. Meaning we did look a lot into customization, but non-customization. Yeah, if there is a support structure, how can we work with it that it's the same on every single insole if the size is the same? What is the post process? How can we really identify some knobs and push buttons to keep a regular production flow, even if the part looks still a little different? One last example, we have unique identifier on every sole, which is 100% machine readable. So wow. We scan a data matrix code, and immediately in the system, it tells us, okay, it is now the pair for Davide or for Andreas. So all the sorting, all those tiny items which make the costs much higher, we try to take out for standardization as much as possible, even if it's customization on the product.
It's one of the very few examples where you actually scaled up successfully additive manufacturing. So it's definitely very interesting to me and in general to the kind of topics that we follow. So beyond healthcare and the medical segment, which do you think are the most relevant product segments that you will be looking at today and in the near future?
If we look into the topic customization, we see the sporting area, the consumer goods is as of now the one with the most need or wish for customization. So we, for example, go into bike saddles, which are also customized for each rider. On the other side, we now see automotive coming more and more into additive manufacturing. Everyone would think, oh, automotive, anyhow, technology driven, there is a lot of money in the market. Indeed, yes, that's true. But still, our experience is it's still, I would say, in some areas, hesitating to switch over to additive manufacturing.
Sure.
Why? At the end, yeah, the car market, it's quite different as consumer goods. Cars are not, yeah, if you, for example, get a car, you have it quite long. The quality aspect is a lot of times on a much higher need. Question is, how long do the parts take? So there are still so many hurdles for automotive to take parts, but we do see that definitely coming. We don't see customization coming for automotive, but we do see that there is not only just one piece, but maybe it's five different pieces. We believe before you go for customization on a car seat, you're going for medium, soft, extra soft, hard, extra hard, and you usually then can cover the driver or the passenger with a very comfortable seat without having the need of customization. And those are indeed the two markets we are right now serving the most, automotive and consumer goods. I think that's also will be in 24 our biggest market. And on consumer goods, it's for sure a lot in regards to sporting goods.
And that's also very interesting because automotive, a lot of companies see it as the ultimate objective to be able for additive manufactured products to actually meet the demands of the automotive industry in terms of, as you said, quality, but also, of course, in terms of cost, while offering some customization options that could not be offered in traditional manufacturing. You mentioned the bike saddles, and I guess for size and customization capabilities, that's a really strategic product. We've seen many different ones, and I know you've worked on multiple ones. Can you just review the ones that you've brought to market so far? What were the main challenges and the main benefits that you were able to offer to the manufacturers?
Yes, indeed, it was a parallel scenario like we did in the past on the Adidas midsoles. We started on Specialized with bike saddles, big world-class player for bikes and bike saddles or bike equipment overall. We ramped up for that customer's production quite big. There have been years where we produced a six-digit number for bike saddles. So we produced the cushioning, different versions. Also here, it's still ongoing. And on the other side, we now entered exactly into the same direction as I mentioned earlier, that we are now running, on the one hand, scaled bicycle saddles, and on the other hand, we are running a Lot Size 1 project. It's a bike saddle company in Czechoslovakia. It's called Posedla. They're offering 100% customized bike saddles, wow, meaning you're getting a measurement kit, you're getting your pressure points measured, you send it back, and you're getting a percent customized lattice made exactly for your needs. In this case, they have the expertise on lattice, but they are also the customer. We are getting parts of the data and producing single saddles. In this case, it's not liquid. In this case, it's our second big technology, which is multi-jet fusion from HP. Those saddles are made out of TPU and afterwards going through vapor polishing. So also from the process, quite interesting, sometimes a little tough, because we never know what's coming. The saddle from the outside, it still looks like a saddle. There are different models, but the inside is every time so different, sometimes dramatically different, meaning the lattice are almost too thin, sometimes too thick, that we had really some hard times getting this project into production to be able that really every part which comes can be produced at the same quality level.
I can imagine the challenges associated with that. And you mentioned that you use multi-jet fusion for this. Can you go a little bit more in detail about when you decide to use the powder technology, when you decide to use the liquid resin technology, which benefits each technology has?
For sure. At the beginning of a discussion, as usual, is the question, what will it be? Will it be the resin production or powder? Why at the beginning? Because the product needs or the customer wishes. Yes, there is no other way. Either one of that decides which material it is. And once you define the material, it's clear which technology will it go.
Okay.
And indeed, we only have two product sections where we can use both. All other product sections, it's crystal clear where it goes. A lot of sporting goods are done on the resin. On the one hand, customer knows it. On the other hand, because of performance, when it's about shoes, it's in the near future getting a more diverse, yeah, because there are now coming solutions which are comparable to resin also on powder, sure, to the market. But when, let's take the easy example, the car seat, there are so many regulations that for a regular serial car seat, we are right now bound to powder. On the other hand, if it's about cushioning, for example, sure, American football helmets or safety gear on for your body, we have very good resin materials which are dampening, which you cannot create just by different lattice structure out of powder.
Sure.
So safety and high rebound goes into liquid. Automotive interior comfort or bigger pieces go into powder. And the geometry is very complex in regards to support structures. Usually no one likes support structures. That's a classical benefit for the powder. You don't need those structures. On the other hand, our resin printers are printing pretty fast. So if you have components like bicycle saddles, yeah, which are only 15 millimeters high, we are really able to print a lot, very fast and a lot.
Wow, that's really fascinating. All the different elements that you have to take into consideration when developing a product line, but still using the same technologies to produce so many different products and so many different levels of customization and geometries and materials that you can play around with to meet the requirements of the customer. We know it's what 3D printing is about, but it's always fascinating to hear about it in reality, how it really works. I know you've developed an online ordering platform to address demand of smaller lot size productions. How exactly does that work?
It took us some discussions, are we going in that direction or not? But at the end, there have been too many customers or contacts where we did, for example, regular production runs. They ask us, oh, can you also offer here and sell some prototypes? Where we usually say, okay, this is not directly our business. Why? Maybe we are too expensive. Yeah, if your request runs through all that different departments. But end of or middle of last year, we got this question asked quite a lot. That's when we decide, okay, if the customer has something which is ready developed and he just needs parts, it's a quick turnaround, no need that all our engineering, project management, or whoever looks at it, why not offering for those customers 3D printing online portals? That's, I would say, the usual business model for a regular service bureau. You can go to our webpage, register on our site. Once you are in, you upload your data. Then you choose at the end of the day, what material do you like? We are offering everything out of our powder bed fusion. And then it's directly routed to production. It's going into the lean team. They're looking at it, directly routed into the printers, and turnaround is, I think, 3 to 7 days, depending what you choose. It's really used a lot for the technical components, testing components, because if someone wants to have 1,000, 5,000 pieces, they still usually call our teams, because then it's mainly also about some more topics, not just printing. But that's used quite well. We are not yet known everywhere for that function, yeah, because they know us for lettuce, for customization products, for scaled products, not for the prototyping. For us, it is the last missing slot that we really can offer all different versions in 3D printing. We will add the next half year on liquid possibilities, meaning the soft or the rigid materials, which I think gives quite a huge benefit to the market, because those materials you cannot get everywhere, just on the portals. PA12, I think that's a most known one you can get almost everywhere, but we try to really bring in our full possibilities for production and materials into that platform.
We've talked about the kind of products that you are looking into producing. We talked about the batch sizes. You're one of the few companies that has already achieved multi-million part applications. So I'd like to ask you a more general question. Where do you think polymer additive manufacturing is headed? What are the main developments that you expect? Are you still convinced that additive is going to be a major part of Oechsler business in the future?
I start with the last one. We definitely see additive manufacturing going forward, also from a strategic point of view on our end, yeah, not only production. We definitely see also a lot of benefit coming via additive manufacturing for our core business. We are doing electronic parking brakes, medical inhalers, whatever polymer components, where it's clear that the product will be produced in injection molding, millions of parts, never in additive manufacturing. But industry and customers, they are tired of waiting for tool times, yeah, meaning they don't want to invest into loops, into tools, one tool after the other. Meanwhile, we are developing components in additive manufacturing, which afterwards will be produced in injection molding. That's why we see additive manufacturing also from a strategic point of view needed. In regards to market segments or new products, what we will see, I think that the footwear market will see definitely something coming up the next month or years. Meanwhile, if you look, you see some small scale shoes here and there, some design shoes, but a big one like we did is not there, a second one. But with new technology, new materials, we definitely see that coming. And we do see additive manufacturing in the personal protection growing a lot. Doesn't matter if it's industry, sporting goods, or regular safety devices, because you can make the difference between existing products or even better new products. So those ones are the ones where you will definitely see more and more coming the next years. And on the ONP, so orthotic and prosthetic, I think that's an overall big item where everyone is chasing. How do I get a foot in 3D printing into insoles, into armbands, wristbands? That's a big one. But as I mentioned, everyone is right now looking into that. So this will be a market very fractured, And a lot of companies want to gain some profit on that one.
Absolutely. Are you happy with the kind of productivity that you have been able to achieve, and it's more of a matter of finding applications, or do you think productivity of additive manufacturing needs to be significantly improved before we can have more applications?
I would say productivity, we are in a level where it's tough to squeeze out more percent. For sure, it's a chicken and egg problem as everywhere. Machines are still very on a very high cost level, material are still on a very high cost level. So what comes first, volume or decrease in costs? So we see it a combination. Our biggest challenge is definitely still the acceptance of additive manufacturing in regular industries. 8 out of 10 communications, discussion, phone calls with potential customers, we still see that the customer either does not know anything about 3D printing, or still think it's just prototyping, and when they have a part in hand, it will break.
Of course.
The pioneering and convincing actions on our end, they are still as high as the last 3 years. It's getting a little better, but this one is getting very slow implemented in the market or in the minds of the customers.
Of course, and that's what we're all working towards. Thank you so much for this very informative talk, and we'll talk again soon.
Definitely. Thanks a lot. It was an honor for me.
Thank you.